me pones un ejemplo. Entonces, si tú no quieres hablar conmigo, dímelo para yo no llamarte ni molestarte, porque nada más quedaba tú.
Real talk. Real people. Real stories. The He's Just Podcast. Yeah! Welcome, everyone, to another He's Just Podcast. I'm your host and founder of the He's Just a Social Worker movement with another amazing show for you today. But before we get started, I want to remind everyone that this platform was built because way too often as people, we were overlooked or labeled. And this is no longer our plight, and our fight is for anyone and everyone who feels a need to be understood. We are strong as individuals, but unstoppable when we unite. Today, I want to kick us off with a special guest. Dean Tolson is a former NBA professional basketball player and motivational speaker. He began his life in the ghettos of Kansas City, Missouri, and became one of the outstanding high school basketball players in the nation. He went on to play for the University of Arkansas, and during this time served in the U.S. Army, where he received an honorable discharge. Dean's dream of playing professional basketball was realized when he was drafted by the Seattle Supersonics. After playing in the NBA for 3 years, Dean then traveled the world professionally and played international basketball for 11 years. At his mother's encouragement and with the support of the University of Arkansas's athletic director, Dean returned to Arkansas to pursue a degree in history. His graduation was featured in Sports Illustrated. Today, we discuss with Dean his book, Power Forward, which talks to us about his gripping story from childhood in an orphanage to his academic achievements from being illiterate to graduating magna cum laude with a master's degree in education. Dean's public speeches for the youth share the importance of pursuing an education and reaching for your goals. We are proud to walk today with Dean and listen to how he overcame great odds to find success with no limits. Dean, welcome to our show.
Thank you, Jules, and for having me on today and an opportunity to speak on your show, as well as your listeners and audience out there and all the people that you and I feel that can benefit from this journey and mission that I'm on, especially our kids across the country.
Well, thank you. And we're honored. Just take us away. Tell us a little bit about your childhood, if you will, before we dive into anything else. You began a life of fight and struggle throughout, which named you to being one of the best people that I've obviously met within the last year with all of the fights and challenges you've never given up. Tell us a little bit about that so our listeners can listen to your journey and your walk.
You know, with all due respect, I just don't believe that there's anything special about what Dean Tolson did. What I believe is special is the message itself and how many people it can actually help. Millions and millions of people this story can help if I can get them to just listen. That's the hardest part. Mm.
So for us, Dean, when you were a child, you had to overcome changes, just like, as you mentioned, ordinary family members go through divorce and breakups. And that was also something that you dealt with. Tell us a little bit about your time growing up after dad left and those changes that you had.
Okay, overcoming adversity as a child. We're all faced with that. It's unavoidable. We all have to go through it. And my journey is different than someone else's. But as a child, we were poor, extremely poor, with no dad. One mom, three jobs. One mom and three jobs to feed five kids, clothe them, send them to school, and feed them. That went on until I was 9 years old, to where she broke down and I had to go in an orphan home for the next 5 years of my life, from 9 to 14.
Now, you being there were some lessons that you obviously learned, and we don't really want to dive too much to, like, tap in, because we don't want to, you know,
the emotional,
maybe get into that peace side of it. But I also feel that it's important, because for those of us, you did have a support system. You had some hardworking uncles, and you have had support systems throughout your life. But through that time, what is it that you can recall that kind of shaped you a bit, if you will, during your time at the orphanage?
Basketball helped shape me. It opened a lot of doors and different avenues for me to pick and choose from what I think or I would like or want to do or don't want to do. And I pick and chose the right things, including having a kid take my ACT test and SAT test for me to get me admitted into the University of Arkansas to even play basketball for the University of Arkansas, or I never could have got in on my own experience, educational experience. There was no way I could pass those ACT, SAT tests.
We found that in reading some of your book, and we're going to dive into it, but walk us through, you had a God-given talent in athletics, obviously, and school was something that you began to leave dormant, but you saw that early from junior high school on. You got into high school, you was just getting passed along, if you will. Can you tell us a little bit about that situation and how that was being overlooked, at least by you at that point, before you made the strides that you did?
Well, Jules, I never wanted education or school or learning or reading books or anything to do with that. And I was not forced by anyone to force me to do it. My mother had an eighth grade education. My dad had a third grade education. And the school didn't care if you learned or not. So when my teachers would see me, they would discipline me, but they couldn't make me learn. See, there's a difference between disciplining a child and a child learning. Those are two different things. And I didn't do either one. They couldn't discipline me, nor could I learn. So I was just buck wild playing basketball all the way through school.
When you noticed that you had the talent, you were growing exponentially. You also found that your growth, there was more responsibility to you, if you will, and you weren't able to gauge exactly through different points of your life, as I got to understand, how to use your superpowers. You knew basketball was your outlet, but there were other gifts about you that became dormant that you learned through as you were getting older. But as you were growing up and now you're going into college, was there a point in your life that you still was yearning to get something, but you just didn't really know what it was? Or was it just basketball that just covered your whole vision of what you thought next?
Because I was an exceptional athlete, I averaged 30 points a game and 20 rebounds a game my senior year. I made first team All-State. I was the top player in the state of Missouri coming out of high school. Nobody could beat me playing. Okay. So I'm uneducated. And the worst thing I want to warn kids out there about is these gifts and this favoritism that you get because you can play. You're a kid, of course you're going to suck that all in. You love it. But that don't mean you're going to become educated. So you're asking me what happened to me. So I saw all this favoritism, first team All-State, All-City, you know, I'm getting 200 letters from different colleges around the United States to attend their university. And I can't even read the letters that's inviting me to their school. So I take all these trips to these universities and see their campuses and look at, they have the students and the ball players that are already at that university, show me around the campus, take me on dates with girls to the movies and things, and buy me dinner, and the coach give them money to show me around to convince me to go to this school. And then at the end of the recruiting trip, they looked at my transcript and they sent me back home. Mm. And only one school was willing to cheat to get me in, and that was the University of Arkansas Razorbacks. Mm.
When you finally get drafted, 74, you go in there, and now you get selected. What was that like for you?
Well, I was the first NBA player to come out of the University of Arkansas in mm-hmm. the history of school. Mm-hmm. And I was also drafted by the ABA with Dr. J, and Kevin Lockery was the head coach then. Mm-hmm. And I chose to go with Bill Russell and the Seattle Supersonics over the ABA because mm-hmm. my dream was always to play in the NBA. Will Chamberlain and Bill Russell, you know. So I had Bill Russell, I had Will Chamberlain in my life at 5 years old. And of course, I didn't know I was going to grow to be 6'9" and jump out of the gym. I was just 5 years old. But 15 years later, I was a Seattle Supersonic playing for Coach Bill Russell in Seattle.
Mm. Yeah, blessings.
So I've been both of these icons in my life when I was drafted. And I knew I had it made. That was my ticket to success in life. I finally overcome all that adversity and ghetto, Kansas City, illiterate, 4 years of college, averaging 23 points a game and 15 rebounds a game coming out of Arkansas. And I got it made, not been to make all these millions. And when I got to Seattle, Bill Russell benched me. Mm. And I was the highest scorer and highest rebounder coming out of Division I University. Out of all the players he drafted, I was the number one scorer and rebounder that he had. And he let them play, and he benched me.
What was that like for you?
It shattered my dreams because I didn't even get an education, and my focus was on getting in the NBA and making millions, which I would have done because Spencer Haywood was the highest paid player on the Seattle Supersonics, and he signed for $6.5 million mm-hmm. in 1973. I came in 74. Hmm. So I had that type of potential, and I'm talking about Kobe Bryant type game. Mm-hmm. Benched. My first NBA game, I scored 12 points in 60 seconds. No man has ever done it again. Mm-hmm. The very first time I touched the floor, in 60 seconds, I had 12 points. It's unheard of. And he pulls me out of the game, and I don't get to go back in. And he did that to me the whole year, that year.
Did you have conversations with him about that?
Oh, absolutely. And he would say, boy, if you keep asking me to play, I'm going to put you off the team. I said, well, they losing, coach. They can't play. I'm sorry. Can you imagine 6'9" with a 48-inch vertical and what I could be doing out there? Nobody on the team had that but me.
Hmm. So now you play 3 years under this icon and you go into international ball. What was that like during that period of time?
Well, if the NBA wasn't going to utilize my talents, then I'm going to take them somewhere else. So that's what I did. And I averaged 45 points a game. Everywhere I went, 40, 45 points a game everywhere I went, over there. Mm-hmm. And so I knew I could score on anybody. All I needed was opportunity. So I kept playing and kept playing and kept playing, hoping somebody would see me. Just like I'm doing with this educational story. I'm hoping somebody will see it. Mm-hmm. And they don't see it. I've been speaking it for 40 years now, since I was 32 years old when I started learning to read and write. I'm 73 and I still, and still no one has heard what I'm saying to them and their kids out there. Mm. Do you want your kid to graduate from high school and college? Who don't want their kid to graduate from high school and college? Then why is this story keep falling on deaf ears to the listeners out there? And your kids are not exceeding and excelling educationally, and you keep turning the other head like it don't exist. And these generations keep going by and by and by. And these teachers in these schools keep doing less, less, and less. And the kids keep failing, failing, and failing. And nobody understands why. Well, I understand. You can't trick me no more about it.
You know, Dean, when people Google your name, mm-hmm. who's Dean Tolson, they see your name and someone who is illiterate mm-hmm. next to it in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And thinking about having to carry that, to me, it was, here's a man who is willing to do what he can to be better at something that he believes can change the world. And education for you seems to be that real ticket. And now that you go back to school, urged by your mom, and you had some supports mm-hmm. back at the University of Arkansas, what was it like you knowing that you were going up that uphill journey? I can't read or write. How am I going to get this done? Take us through that.
I had five vows that I had to make for myself. And those five vows is the five vows that I did not make for myself from 18 to 21. When I set all the records and broke all the records in Arkansas that I still hold to this day. No one has broke my rebounding records. I'm the first leading rebounder and the second leading scorer in the history of the school. Nobody's broke that. In 52 years, it's still there today. Arkansas just lost in the tournament to Texas Tech in the Sweet 16. They don't even come close to breaking it. Bobby Portis is the last one that was come close. He's with Milwaukee Bucks right now with Giannis. Mm-hmm. Okay? He averaged 12.2 rebounds a game. Still can't get 15 every night. It's hard to do. So when I went back to school, these are the things I did. I cry every night for 4 years. That's how I start. Every mm-hmm. night, I cry about it. Then two, after I cry, I pray. After I pray, I'm asking for strength to overcome what this was done to me. Number three, now that I got strength to overcome this, what was done to me from God, I can start to study my lesson. Clear my mind of all the negative things that have been done to me, where I made millions for people and they just used me. That's enough to send a man into a mental institution. Is it not? Hmm. You feel like you've been used your whole life by the system? Number four, I would peel my bedspread back, and my every book that I have that semester, which is normally four or five books, I'd have a course guide and the book with my course guide along that side, that book. I never close my book. I always leave the books open to the chapters where I'm supposed to start reading. This is called overcoming illiteracy at a college Division I level. That's what we're talking about here. And how I did it. You asking me how I did it, right? Don't close that book. Keep it open, because you got to read those chapters before you go to bed that night. So as I read each book, and sometimes it'd be two chapters in that book, sometimes it'd be two, three chapters. It just depends on what the teacher's assigning. Then after I read that chapter, I lay that down on the carpet beside the bed. And after I do each book that way, I peel the downer back and the sheets, and I get into bed and I pray for the next day. Go to class. Don't never skip class. Because whatever the teacher is lecturing on, believe you me, 80 to 90% of us going to be on that test. So if you miss class and you didn't take notes and you read the chapters, you're not going to pass. Unless you're extremely smart and brilliant, where you can read those chapters and interpret all of that information yourself and take that test and pass it without going to class. That is an extremely bright student that can do that.
And you're doing this at age 32, Dean, which is me even more remarkable for you to walk through life, face all the challenges that we talked about priorly, which every person has their own story, legit, yes, everyone has a struggle, but here you are, unidentified, no special education services, no real tutor this or that or this.
No fundamental background of anything.
And here you are showing up and showing out every day. You're talking about people younger than you. You're sitting in this class. You may think a big man with a big presence, right, with NBA pedigree.
That is, yeah.
With the things that you've had to do, big ups to you, brother, because listen to this.
Thank you.
For me, there's some pieces for me, because I too had to go back to school at an older age. And part for me was, I was just, you know, hanging out or doing things that were not supportive or conducive to what learning is. I get my GED, but this story is like no other. You're talking about you cannot read or write. And this erosion of self-esteem is just the repeated experiences that you may have had to say and listen to yourself of not being able to accomplish this so many, like, the beginning point of your life.
How many times I wanted to quit? Every day. I want to quit every day. For 4 years. I said, this is nuts. This is crazy. Tears just rolling down my eyes. I told you I cried first. Every day, every night, I go into my bedroom, I close the door, and I just cry. Because I don't know how to handle it any other way. Cry and pray. Strength to overcome the adversity of being illiterate and starting from ground zero at 32 and go from an F student to a straight A student at 32 and didn't graduate till I was 36. And that's what the Sports Illustrated article wrote 5 pages on it. Me and my mom.
Beautiful. And for me, there was no shortcuts, because you were used to having someone sit in for you to take a test and pass it for you. GPA being 1.8, 2.0. Oh, yeah, we're doing 1.3. Great. Yeah.
And that was a gift.
And now you are putting in the work. You're sitting in there. How was that transformation for you as you started to see yourself develop in reading and writing? What came first? Did you read first? Or did you write first, or did it happen both at the same time? How did this happen?
I had a photographic memory and didn't realize I had one. And by going back to school, I exercised that and figured out, wow, I can do this. And didn't know I could even do it. See, there's a difference between an undergraduate and a master's degree. The difference is, in an undergraduate degree, you have to read and recall and transfer it back down on paper to pass a test. Okay? There's not a lot of, there's a lot of memorization in undergraduate work. And there's also a lot of study and turning in assignments. But in a master's degree, it is strictly research and discovery, except for statistics, qualitative, quantitative statistics. And we'll get into that in a minute, okay? How I did that. It's a miracle. And I can explain any kid how to pass a math class. And I've never had a math class in my life. And I got a B out of statistics in my master's program. I never had algebra, trigonometry, geometry, algebra, finite math, chemistry. Never had none of that. But I got a B in a master's level statistics. And I can still recite it to you this day, how and why and how I was able to do it and pull it off. In interval, ordinal, ratio, nominal. Those are the four levels of measurements and statistics. I had that. I graduated at 57 years old. That was 15 years ago. I still remember it to this day. Those are the only four levels of measurements and statistics. Interval, ordinal, nominal, and ratio.
You know what I was thought was really cool when you and I got to chop it up the first time? When you looked around at that last class that was stopping you from graduating.
And that was in between graduation.
Yeah. So you're sitting in the front and you're like, okay, this is it. This is it. But then you start seeing a lot of people drop out of this class.
Scared me to death. I said, half the class. I looked back and I said to one of my student neighbors, I said, hey, what? Where did everybody go? She said, they dropped before the last drop date. I said, what do you mean they dropped? She says, they don't want to mess up their GPA and flunk this class. I said, oh my God.
I said, I can't drop.
I got to go through this. And so just tears just started rolling down my eyes. That I may never graduate and get my master's. And I had an instructor. She was brilliant and smart and clever. And she says, Dean, you can pass this class. I made a 97 on the first test. I made a 95 on the second test. And I made a 65 on the final and got a B out of the class because she tricked me. I should have got an A out of the class. We studied one way all year. And then that's why I got a 97 and a 95. And then when she gave us the final, she said, I want to know that you know it. And tricked me. And all she had to do was tell me to study that way. And I'd have got an A out of the class.
Now that you share that, is it possible for some of our students, now that you share that, is it possible for students to have a connection with a teacher, a mentor, and learn that style, and somehow, some way, the plan goes out of whack, if you will, if the system is changed? Can you help us understand that?
Well, I graduated magna cum laude with a 3.9. And I should have graduated with a 4.0. And the reason I say that is because I had a tutor for 7 hours a day for 5 months. That's how long a semester lasts, every day. And I rest on Sunday. I never studied on Sunday. Just Monday through Saturday. 15 hours a day for 5 months straight to get a B out of that class. 7 hours with a tutor and 8 hours by myself after he leave my apartment. He and I go 7 hours straight first thing in the morning. Then the rest of that evening and afternoon and evening, I'm studying for 8 hours on my own, brushing up on what he taught me. Now, I can show you an illustration that'll bust your head that I freelance wrote to learn and teach myself how to do statistics, master level statistics, not undergraduate, master. This is very important. Master level statistics is different than undergraduate. It's hard.
You know what, Dean? Like, here you are, once again, being able to play in the NBA. You serve the country. Mm-hmm. You overcome adversity throughout your whole life. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that you continue, that you are most passionate about in the two times that we have spoken, is academics and kids. Yes. Why in the world does this move you so much? Like, even the pitch and the feeling in your voice is felt here. Why is this so moving for you?
That's what brings tears to my eyes. Because when I was a little kid, nobody ever came to my school and said nothing about nothing. Not even the NBA. I was the first NBA player out of Kansas City, Missouri. Ever in the history of the city. So the reason it's so moving for me is I put myself in the place of these little kids right now. I was once one of them, wasn't I? At one time. That's why. That's your answer. I used to be one of them where they're at right now. And nobody is reaching out to them. The country is failing. The whole country. And nobody cares but me about them. Little rascals.
Let's talk about your book, brother. Power
Piper, when it comes to those kids, you ought to see me in a speaking engagement. I can play my tune and they just follow me. Mr. Tolson, did you see The Great Debaters?
I did.
You did? That's my uncle in real life. That's Melvin B. Tolson. He was the professor in the movie. Denzel Washington played him. And here I come with this story 100 years later. That was 1932. It don't fall far from the tree, do it?
Not at all.
So this is real talk. You said it's real talk show.
That's right.
And I want to keep it real because the audience need to know if they want their kids educated, this is what they must understand, that it starts in the home first. Then it goes out from there. Don't expect somebody else to educate your kids. You educate them to the point to where they want to be, educate themselves as time goes by in their life. And nobody showed me that. So I just rambled through, playing ball, thinking I'm gonna make millions. This mythical illusion I had that did not work out. I got there, and it was the same as me not getting there, wasn't it? That's why I went back to school and showed everybody and showed the world that I could pull this upset off And if I was illiterate at 32 years old and pulled it off, I don't want to hear an excuse from any kid saying they can't do it.
Mm.
I just don't hear from them.
They're just telling me that they're quitting and giving up, and that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about excelling and succeeding in education. And I don't want this conversation to where people saying, oh, everybody don't need a college degree and all. We're not even talking about that. We're talking about a general education so somebody can navigate their blueprint through life, whatever type of education they choose to have.
You gave us a glimpse of what you began to discover about yourself as you explored this visualization of being able to use memory recall to support your learning. And you used it to your advantage in a very big way, understanding that when you were putting your pieces together for this book, and you sat down, how was that process? We're talking about your book, Power Forward. What was that like for you to see this book now here?
It took me 10 years to write the book. I wrote the book because nobody knows the story but me. That's why I had to write it. But I couldn't write it and make it into a sellable, marketable product. But I could tell the story. So I had to pay somebody $30,000 to do that. That's what I paid to have this Power Forward book. That's what it cost me. And I got a lot more in it than just that. However, that's neither here nor there. The point is, and the question you're looking for is, how did I come up with formulating this ideal to even do a book project and present it to the public to where it could benefit people who want an education, or who's struggling to get an education, or who wants to succeed because of getting an education. That's what I wrote the book for.
What can listeners get from your book, Dean? When you open it up, any page, any chapter, what do you want our listeners to get from your story?
You'll see every page that you turn, a mistake was made by me because I'm illiterate and uneducated. It's 230 pages, 22 chapters. And as you turn those pages, every page you read, you will see where I corrected something on the previous page before I went forward. Until I got a master's degree and went from illiteracy to a master's degree from a Division I university. The SEC, the biggest conference in the nation. My school was chartered number 15 in the nation in academics. Out of all the Division I schools, their master's program was number 15 when I graduated. I don't know what it is now. And there's over 40,000 colleges in America and universities. And it was number 15. So that tells you not only I know what I'm talking about, I got a quality degree.
For me, you know, the anxiety, there's a lot of mental health that's here that you know, or just like walking through as I am in your journey now, the anxiety of an everyday situation, even putting this book together, 10 years in the making, being going back to correct mistakes, being hard on yourself, like these simple tasks, like reading a sign, like filling out a form, any of these things can trigger this level of high anxiety and avoidance. And maybe the younger you who dealt with that, who fought his way using his fist or probably used his skill set to navigate using basketball, But the world is cruel and is a stressful life. And
it's unforgiving.
And now you're 32. You walk back in there. There's a piece of social anxiety and withdrawal. And you don't give up. You use your five pieces as you had talked about. Mm-hmm. What were some of the ways that you seeked out help, if you did? In which way?
I found financial help in Frank Broyles. I dedicated the book to him. Mm. That's important. Financial help. It's not easy. If you go through Division I school right now, you're talking about Stanford or Ivy League, or you're talking $250,000 for 4 years. Undergrad. Books, fees, out of state, tuition, room, board, transportation. You're talking a quarter of $1 million for a quality education. Hmm. And who can afford that? Nobody. And that's why the message is so important to the kids, is because nobody's going to give them that.
Well, the NBA didn't give it to you, Dean. Under my mindset, I said, well, as a former NBA player, this is a story to lift up. This is what I said to you when I first met you. I said, they have to lift up. How discouraging was that when this system, this brotherhood, if you will, that is the NBA family.
What happened? They don't care. It's a business. It's a business. And kids are so hung up on their cell phone and think this is the answer to life right now. Oh, I can take my cell phone and I can make $2,000 a day. Man, they don't understand it ain't going to be the answer in their life.
Money was not, brother. You made $1 million off a cleaning company. So we're not even talking about the money that you had to earn. It's not about money.
No, it's not. This is about you as an individual and who you are and how you find that answer to that out in your life. And nobody's coming to help you figure it out. Nobody came to help me. I had to figure that out. And that's the message. And I don't give a hoot where you get it from or how you get it. This life will boil all the way back. See, we point the finger, and when we point the finger, it got a hook on the end, and it just always comes back right here. When it's all said and done, Dr. Jules. Mm. It's about yourself and what you do and don't do and willing to do and sacrifice to do and want to do and don't want to do and listen to and who you don't listen to. All of that's on you. And all these things you're talking about at 32, I'm having to figure that out. To overcome illiteracy and make something of myself. This is so valuable that a price tag cannot be put on it in dollars.
These courageous decisions that are laced inside of your book, so much is there to be told in the book, Power Forward. But there was a paraphrase, and I'm going to try to summarize in this way. You kind of talk to this right now, is you need to find a way to do it on your own. There was a moment in life that your uncle went to help you out, and there was something that you had to figure out on your own. Count on thyself. You said you have to learn how to do things on your own, not your brother, not your family. No one daddy. Is going to be there.
Right.
And that to me just left me shook, because I said, this life that we are living speaks just to that.
That's right. That's the universe. That's how it is designed. We can't change that. We're just in it as individuals, independently. See, it's funny how that works, Jules. Frank Broyles gave me $300,000. Now, that's just for my education. Okay? That's the only reason he gave it to me. Now, what about what I'm going to do? What's my part? See that? Now I'm on my own, ain't it? Even though he gave it to me, doesn't mean anything, does it? Doesn't mean nothing, does it? It's what I take and do with it, isn't it? And I did it. If your parents are paying for you to go to school, don't take that for granted. Maximize that opportunity that they're providing and don't let your grades drop. Or you drop out of school for this excuse or that excuse. Every 26 seconds, a kid drops out of high school in America. That's 7,000 a day. And climbing. We in a recession right now. They just ain't announced it.
And we just ain't speak to it, because when you look at that 26, guess what demographics they fill?
What's that?
Black and brown. These are the numbers that continue to largely impact us, because we have to go out here to work. We have to go out here to provide. And it's all different for you. NBA player went back to do landscaping, to clean, to do whatever it is you needed to do to get done. Tell us a little bit about what moves you when you go out here to talk to kids at school. Tell us about that. And you reaching them and them asking you maybe a million questions about the NBA, but you're fixated on education. And they keep telling you back, do you know this player? Do you know LeBron James? Do you know this person? Like, what do you say to that?
First off, I start off by telling them, this is not an NBA speech. This is an educational speech today. And I'm not here to entertain NBA tales and stories. I'm here to tell you something, to give you something that's going to carry you from today through the rest of your life. And I don't care if you live to be 90 to 100 years old. You'll have this, what I speak of, to take with you on any journey that you embark upon. I don't care what you choose to do in your life. You'll have an education if you hear me today. And I mean, everyone in here is going to give me this 1 hour today. If you ain't never gave nobody an hour of your time, I realize your attention span is only 10 minutes, but I'm going to take 1 hour of it today. And you're going to walk out of here with some. And I ain't playing. I don't want to hear a pin fall up in here today. I'm in charge today. And I earned the right to stand before you and tell you this story where you can benefit from it. And that's how I get them. And it ain't a teacher or a principal in that room that can do that. I'm the only one in there that can reach them like that in 60 minutes. Now, I might not change every one of them, but I'm going to reach them. And it's their decision to make that change and that decision in their life, isn't it?
Speak your truth.
It's up to them, isn't it? And you can, and I'm just here as an example to prove to you that you can do that. It's doable. But like I said, it's you. See? That finger got to come back here and say, it's me. I got to do this. And how many peaks and valleys and ups and downs and excuses is it out there not to do it? How many? Millions of excuses. You can just pick one and don't do it. Oh, I gotta take care of my little sister or my little brother. Oh, my mother is sick. This and that. I need a job and I ain't got no money. I'm failing. I tried it and I'm failing. How many excuses? And just make one and not do it. That's all you're saying. Oh, I ain't got no money to pay my way. Well, work a job and then take one or two courses at night online. Okay? And pay your tuition from the salary you're making. Hey, go live in the basement of your mama's house. I don't care. Eat hot dogs and pork and beans. I don't know.
Get it done.
We're talking sacrifice. That's what I, those are the things I did.
And let's talk about mama. When we out here talk about sacrifice, talk about the queen.
I love my mama.
Because I can tell you that
I love my
in
mama.
Sifting through your book, there was a connection for me that really stood out. She gave you her word. She said, I'm coming back. And every day you said, this ain't going to happen. I see these kids here never getting picked up. She said, I'm coming back. And I am going to own our own. And she came back and did it just like you. Came back and did it and bought it back. How important was for you to get that master's from mom? And what did you say to her?
Well, you got to understand, my mother was at all three of my graduations. High school, at the Muehlbach Hotel in Kansas City, Missouri, and high school. Graduating from high school. She was at my undergraduate degree at 36 years old in 1988. May of 1988. May the 12th. 1988, and she was at my master's ceremony, graduation ceremony at the University of Arkansas, Bud Walton Arena, Walmart Arena in Fayetteville, Arkansas. They'll see me walk across that stage and get my master's. And then a few years after that, she died. So she see all three of them. And she encouraged me about that education, even though she didn't have one. She encouraged me to get mine because she said, Dean, how in the hell you gonna, they going to pay for it and then you ain't going to do it? She said, that's just stupid, son. I said, Mother, I want to play pro ball. I don't want to do that. I want to make millions. She says, Dean, you didn't show them, they're not gonna let you. They're not gonna let you politically. They're not gonna let you do that. Well, Mother, I've improved it everywhere I went. I proved it in high school, I proved it in college, and I proved it in the NBA, and they still ain't gonna let me? No, they're gonna let me. They never let me. Again, I'm Kobe Bryant, and they never let me. I was one of the best players on the team. None of them could outplay me. None of them. And I was there for 8 years messing with that to try and prove it. And my mother was right. They're not going to let me. But I didn't listen. Hard head, make a soft butt.
But you out here telling the world today what's needed. And this chapter of your life is of the utmost importance because for us of the black and brown, we need to remind ourselves that things can be done and they will be done. And you are the epitome of that. You have showed us through effort and through examples what it is like. Before we let you go, Dean, the floor is yours. Tell us what you want our listeners to remember about the importance of education, the next steps in the movement.
I want them to know that if they're not educated, that education will be the most important part of their past, their present, and their future life, no matter what it is they choose or not choose to do. It will become the most important part of their life at some point. just like it became in mine. See how important this is, what we're doing, right? How important is it? It is as important as you want to make it be. How important is that?
Well said, brother.
And then on top of that, we're talking generational wealth attached to it. Your kids and their kids and their grandkids and their great-grandkids. It's unfathomable. In one human being's mind to consume and wrap your head around all this. And that's what I've tried to do. I've tried to wrap my head around all of it and not let it drive me crazy. What I've gone through, I should be in a mental institution right now. Navigating this system. And we're under this umbrella. And we all are underneath that umbrella in the same system. And nobody can change it, alter it, fix it, or stop it, can they? Nobody. I know. So that means we as people must conform to it because that's all you have. And that's what I did. I finally conformed to that system, even though I was the biggest rebellious individual, professional athlete, high school student, college student, whatever you want to call it. Out there, nobody hated education with a passion more than me. Nobody. And I finally had to circumvent all the way back around 360 degrees and grab it. And then be ready to die. Everybody needs an education. You agree, Jules?
Well said, brother. Everyone needs an education. In the face of adversity, let grace be your guiding light. Amid the challenges, embrace authenticity. Radiate love no matter the internal factors. Smile often, but yes, push harder than all the rest. Because on this platform it was built. Because way too often as people, we were overlooked or labeled. But this is no longer. Our plight and our fight is for anyone and everyone who feels a need to be understood. We are strong as individuals, but unstoppable when we unite. Tune in, friends, to another He's Just a Social Worker show. Coming to another town near you real soon. We're out. Dean, thank you so much for blessing us today with so much knowledge, heart, and love. We thank you, brother.
Thank you, Jules.
Please note that the views expressed here are my own and not a representation of my employers and clients. Thank you for listening. We're always here for you. Just message us and we'll get back to you within 24 hours. Thank you. More than just. He's Just a Social Worker. In memory of my mother, Matilde De La Rosa. This is dedicated to you, Mom. Miss you so much. En memoria de mi madre, Matilde De La Rosa. Esto va dedicado a ti, Mamá.